Okay, we are in Mamar Sheni, Ois Samach Dalid, towards the end of Samach Dalid. Mamish towards the end, Aval Chochma Samuzika, you see?
Okay.
Okay.
Should we do it in the original Arabic?
What's that? Do it in the original Arabic.
There's
an idea. So now, we move into a very interesting discussion here. He has been trying to show, up till now, how the Torah demands involvement, proficiency, in all areas of knowledge. And that the halachas of the Torah draw off all areas of knowledge. We've discussed many of the, what we come to think of as the standard areas of knowledge. Science, mathematics, agriculture, astronomy. Now he dips into another interesting one. Al-Chochmas ha-Muzika, the field of music. Now this also, by today, we almost don't think of it as like a field of knowledge, as an area of chachma. It's entertainment, you know. But the truth is that music is a big area of study. Chashayv ve'uma shimichalekes hanigunim u'ma'amedes oisom alagdolim shaba'am. So if you don't appreciate quite how developed music was among the Jewish people, you have to think and realize that who was music assigned to in the Jewish people? Music was very prominent in the Jewish people. Who was it assigned to? It was assigned to the most prestigious of families, right? The most prestigious of people. Haim b'nei Levi. These are the people of Levi. Mis'askin bani gunim. And where was music used in the Jewish people? Babayis hanichbad. In the greatest of places in Jewish culture, Be'itim Hanichbadim, at the greatest of times, it was over the Karbonis. And now note something else very interesting. The Levian did not have to engage in Parnasa. Now we know that the Kaihanim didn't either, but the truth is it was all of Shevet Levi. Now the Kaihanim, they didn't have to engage in Parnasa. They were very busy people, right? Levim, what were they so busy with? Their sole responsibility was, there's something interesting, very interesting. They didn't need to worry about Parnasa because they received Maisa. That covered Parnasa. Their responsibility was music. They were responsible for maintaining, developing, etc. Music, the music of the Jewish people, for what it needed to be used for, which was what? The Beis HaMikdash.
Were they also like busy learning?
Oh yes, absolutely. They were very busy learning, etc. What he means to say is, in terms of responsibility, they didn't have responsibility to earn a livelihood. They carried national responsibility. Now, whereas the Kaihanim carried a much more heavy duty national responsibility, the Levim, their responsibility was music. Now, and the point that he's trying to make is the other way around. Don't think also they had such an easy life. But he's trying to bring out that this was a field that they were really busy with it. This was their job. This was their function. Learning it, studying it, perfecting it, developing it, etc. Vamlocha.
What does some lady do if he's tone deaf?
Oh, so the truth is, we know that the Levim were divided into two categories. Most of the Levim were what we call Shayarim, gatekeepers. The Levim who qualified were from the Mishayarim, were from the musicians. And you see in this foreign that it was very hard to qualify. It was very hard to qualify. It was a very, very skilled. It required talent and a lot of training to make the grade of the music team.
So it wasn't their soul Asik.
What's that?
Wasn't their soul Asik then?
Feeding what? No, they were two groups.
The Meshayrim.
The Meshayrim.
Only Asik.
Not for the Meshayrim. I mean, for the people who were assigned with music, that was all they did. That was their sole responsibility. It says it was also considered a very high class profession. Because first of all, the malacha itself is not a dirty malacha. Like you have malachas like, let's say, tanning or these sorts of professions. It's a dirty thing. People might not think of it as a high class profession. As an example, you have tanning. What are the such things? So first of all, in and of itself, it's a respectable sort of malacha. Ve'am, and the people involved with it, mechashivus hashoresh, ve'zakus hateva. They were, first of all, we already remember that all the Jewish people are of a special quality, but these people were from the quality people of the Jewish people. Right? This was Shevet Levi. This was the quality, this was the cream of the crop. These were the people who were entrusted with music. David Vishmuel, who are some of the heads of the people in this field? People like David, people like Shmuel. You see that this is something very prestigious, meaning unlike as we'll see soon, today you hear music, you might automatically associate it with the entertainment industry, low people. He actually discusses it soon. That's how it was in their times also, in the time of Kuzari. Right? Who are the leading figures in the music field, not necessarily the most respectable people. Not necessarily the most principled people, etc. To be very, very cheap people, but these are the ones who are carrying the banner of music in our times. We're not talking about it in the Jewish world. I mean, in general, like in the world in general. Who's out there? It's not like there's classical music being produced today.
David wasn't a Levi,
but he was involved in music on the level of composing, etc. Right? The Maisa, they used his Tehillim. His Tehillim, by the way, includes compositions made by other people as well, including many of the chief Levim. But David was a composer. David was a musician. He was helping develop, even though he himself was not actually doing it in the Beis HaMikdash, he was very, very involved. He was one of the developers of the field. So he says, Shmuel HaNavi. So he says, "Umatachshav b'muzika." So now think about that. What would you say? When you see this reality that this is lamaisa, the way music was set up among the Jewish people, these were the people responsible for it, and this was the way they were dedicated to it. What would you guess? Was it well developed field among the Jews, or was it not? So Amar Kuzari. So the Kuzari answers. Now the truth is, we're getting into an interesting discussion here, because today music is very non-prominent in the scheme of things as far as Judaism goes. Right? Halacha, Musar, the areas of Torah that we learn today. How much music is, where does music come into play? We sing Zmiris and Shabbos. See, they make a bit of a big deal about music. But like, I'm sure many will disagree with me on this, but is today music one of the central components of Yiddishkeit? Right? At the end of the day, in a solid way, right? Of course, people like a good farbringen, and people say, oh, it's so important and everything. But lemaisa, right? How much area does it occupy in halacha? How much area does it occupy in gemara? Right? So, we have to realize that music, for some reason, and we'll discuss what that reason is, used to be very prominent among the Jewish people. It was a very well-developed field.
You're looking at it through certain glasses. You could say it's very prominent in the Kiruv field today. Like, it's something that draws people in. It adds to the black and white on the books. It adds something which is intangible. Oh. And that's very prominent today, maybe.
That's true. But what I meant to say is, and again, we're going to discuss what you said plus what I said. What's that?
The choirs.
Yeah. The music industry. Oh. The music industry and the Jewish people is booming, but what I meant to say is, in terms of on the principle level, meaning on the level of, sure, it's a good tool for Kiruv. Chalent is also a good tool for Kiruv. But we also won't say that Chalent occupies a prominent space in terms of Jewish value. Right? It's a chashuv tool. It's very enjoyable. It's geschmack. Right? But, and yes, it's a good tool. But again, in terms of the Jewish value system, Is it prominent? Now, I'm going to leave that as a question mark. I'm not saying it's not. I'm saying that at first glance it isn't. And it's a contrast. You have to understand how come in earlier times it was so prominent and today it's not. We're going to discuss this, Bezos Hashem. We'll try to get a general perspective on music and Judaism because there is some confusion about that. But let's... So I'm Al-Khuzari. What does the king answer?
I just want a filter.
What's that?
I just want a filter to a concert.
A concert. Oh, we'll see if we'll get there too. Now, I'm Al-Khuzari. Shama bli safek nigmara. If this was the reality, that it was considered an essential part of the Avodah Zarah of the Beis HaMikdash, and again, the most choicest people of Klal Yisrael, yet a whole tribe of people were entrusted with this, there's no question that it was fully developed. There's also no question that it was a very inspiring part of the experience of those days. The Beis HaMikdash. Like we know now, that it can cause a person to, it can cause transformation of states, right? It can make a person from a bad mood into a good mood. It can completely switch people's moods around, etc. By the way, I'm just saying again, everything I said before undermining music and Judaism is before we approach it. Okay? I'm just saying, wait. Okay, but whatever it is. He says, and I understand that today it is not on the same level, in the same place as it was. Today, music is cheap. Who's busy with it today? Maidservants and cheap people. I mean, the cheap people of Hollywood. He's making an interesting point. Here he's answering our question. He says, music dropped in its prestige when you dropped in your prestige. Now he's saying something quite literal here. This is, the Ramah says this too in Teres Ha'ilah. When did music move off the scene in terms of the whole Jewish value system? At the time of the Churban Beis HaMikdash. The centrality of music in Judaism was the Levium and the Beis HaMikdash. And in fact, at the Churban of the Beis HaMikdash, Chazal deemed it sacrilegious to be too involved in music. Oh, you already see in the Pasuk where the Levium said, how can we sing the song of Hashem on foreign soil? Right? He says this in Al-Naz Bavel. We know the famous story where they bit off their thumb so as not to be able to play. But actually, Chazal said, if we're talking, again, we're talking Gemara, Chazal said that we should not be playing music anymore today. Now, that's qualified. Lamaisa, by the time it funnels all the way down through Halacha, it's qualified, perhaps it means, with instruments while you're at a meal, etc. But it is important to know that, essentially speaking, Chazal didn't basically come and say, we lost the Beis HaMikdash, we're not involved in music anymore. So even if Lamaisa, we hear music, etc., music has been moved off the scene in terms of the prominence it used to have on the Jewish scheme of things. So now I do want to take out the time to step back a little bit and address it in a more comprehensive way. The value of music in Judaism, what music really is, and how we relate to it now in our times. So first of all, let's just ask in a general way. Again, people like to hear that music is beautiful and that it's inspiring, etc. People would not like to hear that music doesn't hold much value. Because everybody likes good music. Unless you mamish have no ear at all. But people like good music and people are inspired and people, you know, you feel good when you hear, okay. You would like to think that it has value. But let's ask a question. Does it have value? Is it something of value or is it not? I'm just talking in simple terms. So the truth is that it's kind of like asking, is intellect have value? Sure, it has value. The question is what you're going to do with it. Right? Music really is a tool. Music is not an end in itself. Music is a tool, which is often used as an end in itself. The way music is used in general today is something that you enjoy, and that's that. You don't connect it to anything, right? In Judaism, we have the concept that music should be inspiring you for good things. You sing it with inspirational words. And we'll be getting to that. But in a general way, music can begin and end with, where Rabbi Avigdor Miller put it, used to use provocative terms when he talked about these things. He said music basically is the same idea as a feather tickling at your ear. It's just on the emotional level. It tickles the emotions. That's what music does in a broad way. Okay? It gets you excited. It gets you emotional. You can have tears coming down your face. So you think that you're going through some sort of uplifting experience, but it could be completely empty. That is music's property. Music plays on the emotions. Does more than that too. Again, I'm building this up slowly. Music plays on the emotions. And therefore, you have to realize that music can be a way of kidding yourself into thinking that you're engaged in uplifting things, but actually you're just engaged in nothing. Just an example, an annoying example. But have songs. The truth is that there are songs, right? Songs that they love. You sing them with those words. It makes an impression on you. But there's a concept basically of what Chazal say, that sometimes you just take words and use them because they fit the tune well. So the Chazal said, Terech Hegeres Sak, when the Jewish people sing psukim, Terech Hegeres Sak, the Terech girds itself in sackcloth and says, Hashem, I became a musical instrument. Now, this is not referring to when people are singing psukim of inspiration that are truly inspiring themselves, Avodas Hashem. But what it is referring to is to the all too common phenomenon of where there's a good tune and there are words that fit it well, and therefore you sing the words. I'll just give an example. I don't know if this should be recorded. But I remember I was once watching a group of boys sitting at, you know, one of these kumzitzes. A group of boys sitting and singing with a lot of fervor and emotion, right? There's a very popular song to a beautiful tune. It was Pia Pascha B'chachma V'seras Chesed Al Hashayna. You know the tune was very popular a few years ago. Beautiful tune. How much a beautiful tune? And I remember watching a group of boys, and when I was a bachur, singing it with fervor, with emotion. Pia, the words from Eishes Chayil. Pia Pascha B'chachma V'seras Chesed Al Hashayna. Those are the words. And I remember thinking to myself then as a bachur, what are they getting so emotional about? What are the words of this song? All of Torah contains unbelievable depth. Maybe all these boys were privy to deeper pirushim that I wasn't privy to. But if you just take the words in and of itself, I don't think that would be the first thing that somebody who hasn't actually studied it would point as the most inspiring psukim. It's describing the Jewish wife, right? She observes what her house does. Her chesed is on her house. Says a few nice things about the Jewish wife. Why on earth are a group of 18-year-old boys so inspired by that? Right? What's making them so emotional? The answer is it's the tune. They think they're going through some sort of spiritual experience. What? But Avigdor Miller was tough about this. This was the truth. This was the Slabodka approach, the approach of the Bali Musa. He said, you feel very spiritual, and then a moment later, it's gone. The way he put it is, he put it in very stark terms. When a feather tickles your ear, you laugh. It means you're happy. Yes, and when certain moving tunes tickle your emotions, you feel emotional. Anything spiritual about that?
So you can only sing what's shayach to you?
What's that? I'm not saying what you could or can't. I'm asking, is there anything spiritual value there?
Spiritual.
Or is it simple? Or is it simply tickling the emotions? That's all I'm saying. I'm not getting now to right or wrong. I'm saying, people will say, this is ruchnias, right? Singing. In and of itself is ruchnias. Look at the beautiful tunes and the beautiful words. Yeah, beautiful tunes to all kinds of words. Right? Here's a point that Kuzari makes later in the Sefer also. Does the fact that it's an inspiring tune, that it really makes you emotional, improve you in any way? Classical music, the music of these different periods, I don't know, there's the classical period and the Romance period. Gorgeous music, right? The Nazis were big lovers of this music. Made them better people. They know how to weep from a good tune also. Is anything of value about it? It's a tool. It's a stimulant of the emotions. Unless you use it for something. So, what's that? How would we use it? Okay, but first I just want to get this point home. Again, I'll say, for example, you're talking about intellect. We'll compare it to intellect. You can have something of very great value. Intellect is of immense value. Intellect is who we are. But yet, you can be busy with intellect all the time without doing anything with it. For example, let's say you have riddles. A person spends his day deciphering riddles. If it's a pastime, you know, a breather, fine. But let's just talk about in and of itself. It's an intellectual exercise, an intellectual pursuit. Is it getting you anywhere? Is it achieving anything? It's intellect that begins and ends with just challenging the intellect.
Crossword puzzles.
Yeah, Sudoku, crossword puzzles. So if it, yeah, it's a good thing. It gives you a break. You get a breather. Fine. But in and of itself, so that's an intellectual pursuit.
It's boiling down to Torah is the only thing which, because we know that in and of itself, it does get you somewhere. And in Yiddishkeit, we say that even eating, if you have the proper attitude, it's also in and of itself, it's okay, because that's meant to give you strength so that you can learn and sleep and rest and breathers or whatever. But according to this, then only Torah is the only thing which has intrinsic value. Nothing else has value. Because I could say that if I'm not reading for the purpose of relaxation, then that's true. It doesn't have value in itself.
That's true.
It's wasting my time.
That's true.
And each person has to judge accordingly.
So meaning again, in terms of value.
Then nothing's got value.
That's true.
Okay.
That's right. A person who's eating just for eating might be great food. Right? Hasn't got value.
If a person is rested, that is quote of reading, then also has great, so nothing's got value.
That's true.
Okay, so music also is in
that's
the same boat.
That's true. The only reason I'm making such a point of bringing this out is that for some reason, people tend to attribute more spirituality for music. Ultimately, that's for good reason. We'll discuss that soon. But I just want to say on a simple level that the truth is that really, like you're saying, we have to realize music at the end of the day, you know, people tend to attribute more spirituality to music, and we'll explain why soon. Music really is no different than, like you said, reading, doing riddles, etc., etc. Those things don't hold ultimate value more than enjoying yourself, which is fine. Music is nothing more spiritual on that level. That's all I'm saying. Meanwhile, I keep stressing, meanwhile. Okay?
To receive prophecy, they have to play music or something.
Oh, so Rabbi Avraham is starting to challenge me. You see that the Nevi'im used to use music in order to reach levels of prophecy. Seeing here that music played a very prominent place in the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so here we'll actually start really developing this subject for you. We'll start developing it for you. Music, as we said, plays on the emotions. Plays on the emotions. And that already is the reason why it is viewed as something of a spiritual business. Because lamaisa, our spirituality, our spiritual experiences are emotion based. Right? So therefore, everything I just said notwithstanding, it is bordering on the emotional sphere. Just you might not have actually made that connection.
On the spiritual
sphere. Yeah. Yeah.
You said emotional.
Emotional slash, which also, right, is where spirituality has to merge and make its thing, right? So it is kind of in the neighborhood, right? Yet at the end of the day, it can remain just completely empty. The question is, what do you use it for? So what can music be used for? And what will give it its intrinsic value? In terms of value of Judaism. Again, as having a good time, fine. But if we want to really imbue it with Jewish value, let's understand how it works. So let's step back a little bit and talk about approaching the subject in a little bit of a broader way. Music, number one, we said, it creates an emotional state. It creates an emotional state. And therefore, music can be a tool of creating an emotional state that you'll be able to use as a springboard for very, very great spiritual things. Again, we said that it tickles the emotions. So if you just spend a half hour tickling your emotion and then you stop tickling, so that's it. You could have tickled your ear too. But let's say you are saying some pasuk. Lev tor broli elokim. Okay, ruach nochen chadesh mekir. Saying something that you could connect to. Hashem, create for me a pure heart. I want to be able to serve you right. Right? Now you start tickling the emotions while you're singing that, you'll understand that you might be taking those words and bringing them to a much deeper level of your emotion. This is already where we start seeing that it can be a catalyst for spiritual growth. But that's just in a very, very basic way. So number one is, and therefore, again, so therefore also, like you said, in a very basic way, meanwhile, music was used, Nevi'im had to be, again, if we're talking very basic and superficial way, Nevi'im had to be in a serene state of mind in order to get Nevi'im. You couldn't be nervous, anxious, upset, etc. And therefore, they used music for this. They used music in order to be able to get into a state of serenity and meditation, a state of concentration, to be able to clear their mind of all the clutter. And then they used that. The next step was they connected to Nevuah. So absolutely, music can be used in this way, certainly as a spiritual tool. It's even more than that. Music, in addition to just creating a certain state, it can also create associations. It can also help you relate to things in a certain way. Let me give a simple example. The entertainment industry heavily draw on music to help get you into the mood of what's going on in the show. Right? This is what goes on all the time in movies. So I want to give a very interesting example. This is something that I saw as a kid, made a big impression on me. And then this mamish brings on the point of what we're saying here. They were showing how they use music mamish to get you into the mindset they want you to be in. So, I had a video, a shooting of a crocodile walking. Have you ever seen crocodile walk? They swim gracefully. They don't walk gracefully. They're not on their home turf on dry land, okay? They walk kind of like waddling, okay? Whatever it is. But here, there's a shooting of a crocodile walking. And the music is, you see the crocodile is walking slowly, and the music is, bum, 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 like suspenseful, okay? Then they showed that same scene. You see the crocodile walking, but now the music was a little different. It was all of a sudden, the crocodile walking, instead of having an ominous look, suddenly had a comical look. Right? It was kind of like in a comedy kind of setting. It's like waddling, and the music is so you see how the music was teaching you how to relate to what you're seeing, or influencing how you're going to relate to what you're seeing in a drastic way. Right? That would tell me, we want you to be in a suspenseful mode. Use that sort of music. We want you to be in a comical light mode. We'll use that sort of music. It's the same scene. Right? So music also, in other words, what music is doing can help bring a picture home in a certain way. Or as we were saying before, a picture that might be brought home, music can help bring it home in a much deeper way. Right? So therefore, we'll give another example of the way music was used. And here we come to the Levim and the Beis HaMikdash. This is something that they say from the Baal Shem Tov. But Lamaisa has plenty of sources. They say from the Baal Shem Tov as follows. The Divrei Chaim. The Divrei Chaim of Tzan said that the way that the Levim operated was, when a person would come to bring a korban chatos, the kohen would want to impress upon him that it should be real tshuva. So the kohen would actually tell him, he would admonish the person bringing the korban. And at the same time, the Levim would play a tune, a soulful tune or a mournful tune, that would bring the kohen's message home in a much deeper way. Much deeper than just hearing it. Because the tune was facilitating it was serving as a shuttle to bring the Kohen's message much deeper into the heart. And so it would reach an extent that people would become very, very emotional, much more than just hearing the words of the Kohen. They would become very emotional, so that they would become the way that the Rechaim put it was, Ad shenishba habalim somchi deizval shom migoydal is oiru sashir. Because of the inspiration of the song, of the melody, hachoyte yaboyche b'mal nafsho. He would begin weeping, and he would reach true regret. And when the kohen would see that he is sinking to such a level of despair, which is what this was meant to get him, ramzul alavim, then they would suddenly switch the whole tone. The kohen would say, "Good, you did your charata," and then the levim would suddenly switch the tune. And they would start minagim b'klei Hashem nigun shel simcha kedei shiru toshuv u'cheilav. They would start singing a happy song, a song of hope with a hopeful note to it. And the person would now suddenly feel like, oh, I'm off to a new start. And then they would slaughter the karma. So you see that it actually served as a tool to facilitate the spiritual experience of what was going on in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the songs composed were composed for these purposes. I still want to take it further than our superficial understanding of the way music works today, because still, we're still talking about it at a level that we can all relate to. Meaning these things are, they don't just all make sense. We can see this. And the truth is that this is the way we are to use music today. We should use music in this way today. But the truth is that it goes even further than this. And so we'll come back to the Levine, but first I want to take it even a step further. Sometimes, let's take this a step further, it's not just relating to a scene. But sometimes, like we're saying, music can actually enhance the meaning of words that you're hearing or a scene that you're seeing. Like we've been seeing somewhere, you saw like the picture of the alligator. It can give you one sort of insight or a different sort of insight or a deeper level of insight into what you're seeing now, right? So now the Gra said something mamish amazing. And this is the Gra, right? This is not a chassidish source. This is the Gra. Because I just want to quote what the Gra said, and then we'll discuss it. This is his Talmud, the Gra, the Pasah Shulchan. He cites, "Chokhmas ha-muzika shibcha ha-gra harbo." The Gra very much praised the Chokhmah of music. Vaya Omer, he would say, listen to this, "Ki roiv tameat Torah." Most of the deeper secrets of Torah, the reasons of the Torah, "V'soydes shirei ha-levim," the deeper secrets of the songs of the Levim, "V'soydes tikunei ha-zohar," and the deeper secrets of Zohar, cannot be comprehended without a full appreciation of music. But in the Goyin's terms, that didn't mean having a musical ear. The Goyin mastered the field of music. We're talking about well developed in terms of a science, which is really what music is, right? Well developed in terms of a full appreciation and mastery of music was a necessary part of properly comprehending many of the secrets of the Torah. So I just want to explain, what does he mean by this? Really what he means is what we've been discussing, just taking it yet to a subtler level. Sometimes there are things that a person is learning. If he would hear the right melody that is perfectly apt, that is perfectly appropriate to this particular point, it could give him that flash that will enable him to get it in a way that he wouldn't get it without it. It already operates as a counterpart to the intellectual efforts. Or in another way, if we put it the way the Baal HaTanya said it, okay, he said that the speech, speech is the pen of the mind, and music is the pen of the heart. Which means also that you can bring the intellectual ideas, obviously become much better embedded once they are linked to the emotional level. Once you can connect them to the emotional level. This also, music can do for you. Take an idea that's purely intellectual, but with the right music, and here already we're getting to the much more fine chachma of music, with the right music, you can actually take something that seems to be completely abstract, but connect to it in an emotional way, or gain deeper insight, because the music somehow gives you another angle to approach it from, that just the intellectual angle wouldn't have sufficed. Actually, intellectual analysis, from what I understand, I don't know this subject. This is right, I'm just quoting what I saw. You know what? I'm not going to quote this because I'm now thinking of conflicts with it. Forget it. Whatever. But, and I want to read a little further of what the Gross says. I'm skipping. I'm going to go back. Now, in terms of this Chachman, now we're getting to the subtler level of music. when we're talking about what the Levim were doing in the Beis HaMikdash, they had music worked down to a much better T than probably existed in our terms of musical history. What they were able to do was, and this is what the Gro is referring to here also, the perfect notes. See, and in general, we know that there's types of music that inspire the sad music, this, that, but you wouldn't necessarily be able to say, let's say, a piece of Mozart is inspiring and a piece of Beethoven is inspiring. Can you define exactly in what way the Mozart piece differs from the Beethoven piece, or the way this Beethoven piece differs from that Beethoven piece, the 9th and the 5th symphony, in the way it's going to affect you? It's much broader. I would imagine that there are people who are so sensitive to music that they could.
I mean, I don't know. There's major scales and minor scales, so I think that does determine.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. But the question is to what extent?
Completely.
What's that?
It's very scientific.
It is very scientific. Like, what I mean, like, for example, what I mean, for example, is what the girl is talking about here, understanding secrets of Torah, that there's a particular melody that is appropriate for this point, that can drive this point home. And there's another melody that is exactly aligned with that point. You're already mamish breaking it down to the truth is, on the contrary, it could be that the people who are really in music can tell you, oh yes, absolutely. I know that there was this type of music for learning algebra will facilitate it, and this type of music for studying, you know, whatever it is. Perhaps. All I'm trying to do is, I know, for me, these things are chidushim. This is certainly not the way I relate to music on a daily basis. But this is what the Gra is saying, that this is how you use music. There are things that the intellect can just go so far. And if you really want to grasp the full extent of it, you need music to take that extra step further. And this is what he's saying. Some of the deepest secrets of Torah can only be properly understood with that added angle of the music. And in fact, the Gra goes so far as to say, again, this is the Gra, this is not the Chassidish Sfarim. Not that we're undermining them, and we will get to them too. But the Gra says, there are nigunim that Moshe Rabbeinu brought down for Har Sinai for these sorts of uses. This is a nigun that goes with this sort of avodah. This is a nigun that goes with this sort of learning, or with this particular halacha, etc. Because this is what brings it home.
Do we have traditions of music or this kind of learning?
Not that I know of. I don't know. On the contrary, it seems that in terms of tradition, that basically did go lost at the time when they said the period of song is over at the time of the Churban. However, we'll qualify that too. I don't know if we're going to get to that this week.
It's unearthful. I think there's 7 or 12 tunes that date back to that time. One of them being Birkas Kohanim.
The Birkas Kohanim. I heard that also. I don't know. Is there any basis to it? Maybe. Perhaps. Perhaps.
What about the drop of the Sefer Torah or the Haftarah?
That's something else. The trump is something else. It is connected to this subject, but that's not in terms of music and the... those very specific inflections. Although it is related to this discussion also. The truth is, if we would properly understand the nuances of the trump, we would gain deeper insight into the psukim as well. The trump are there to facilitate understanding of the psukim. And the truth is that this is from Medrash Rabbah. Medrash Rabbah says something very interesting. It's a Medrash Rabbah that says, "Kama yigiyis yoga ben amu machalimit shiur alavim." Moshe Rabbeinu had to invest immense effort in order to properly convey music to the Levim. We're not talking about an issue of just a talented musician. We're talking about understanding the art of matching up music to exactly what sort of music can affect what in the spiritual sphere, etc. And now, in terms of what it could really do to a person, the Gra, I'm skipping around in the Gra here, but the Gra says, Al Yada, Yechaylin bin Eyadam Lomus Beklois Nafsha Min Imoisel. Music, when it's taken to the fullest, and when a person really connects to it in the fullest way, you're showing how powerful of a tool it could be. People can die. You know, if a person really connects to music, he could die from how, just from the intensity of how crazy he goes with music. And you can revive the dead with the secrets of music that are contained in the Torah. So this already is really taking everything we've been seeing to a much more developed level, where it's not just an issue of developing a general state of mind or creating a general mood. We're talking about the capability of taking melodies and matching them in a very, very precise way to experiences, to avoidas, to learning, etc., which take it all that much further. This was a science that was fully developed by the Jewish people at the time. They quote from the Chassam Sofer. The Chassam Sofer said, "I would give up a lot of my Torah for mastering the field of music." What did he mean? He loved music so much he'd give up his Torah for it. What he meant to say is that it would be a worthwhile investment. He said, "This is what the Gros said. The Gros didn't master it." And this is what he's saying, right? He explains what the Chassam Sofer said, and he said that yes, I'm saying it after the fact, that music is an important tool for really plumbing the depths of Torah. So now, I want to add to this number one, this talk already explains why in Tanakh we find so much more prominence to music than, like we said before, than we see in the general scheme of things in Judaism today, right? Because yes, then they were operating with the full capability of music as a fully developed science. It wasn't a part and parcel of all kinds of spiritual pursuits. It was a way of getting much further in spirituality. We're limited because we lack that. We'll see soon there are all kinds of things that are inhibiting our fully being able to access Torah and even just Lashon Kodesh. One of the things is that we lost this whole field of music that they had then. But apparently, and this is already, I'm guessing, because this I don't really, not so familiar with. You see that, for example, Rav Nachman of Breslov really developed this whole field to an extent, and here I'm talking, this is already really not my field, I don't know, I'm talking mamish from the outside, but there were actually machloikas in between him and other Hasidic authorities. Wait, I'm guessing, this is a guess, okay, this is not authoritative, I'm guessing that the pshat is that music continued to be conveyed and transmitted like other areas of Kabbalah. Not that I'm saying music is Kabbalah, that's not what I'm saying. What I mean is that a lot of the secrets of music that they had from the time of the Beis HaMikdash, I'm guessing, were actually preserved in a level of Baal Peh transmission, Midor Lidor, and therefore, Lamaisa, you see that, using the example of Nachman of Breslov and other Hasidic masters, this really was a well-developed science and avoided, not just in a general emotional way, to the extent that, I guess I was told by a knowledgeable Breslover Chassid, but I don't know exactly what this means, but it made an impact on me, that there's a machlokes between Rav Nachman of Breslov and I think the Magid of Mizrich. There are two tunes. One is sung to Biaskinu Sudosa Friday night, and the other is sung to Eish Eschayil. And there's a machlokes between Rav Nachman of Breslov and the Magid as to which should be sung to which. Meaning, in other words, there's a machlokes in Ruchnius here. There's a machlokes in... They understood what... They understood what each of these songs are meant to be achieving and how music is helping it achieve these things. So, again, this I'm just using as an illustration. I'm not saying this in an educated way, but it's just, once again, to try to get across that point that music actually is operating at a much more subtle, fine, and deep level, that the music that we relate to today is really just using music in a much more surface level. Even the music that we're using in a good way, etc., is using it in a general way. Like we said before, different tunes are inspiring. We can't necessarily, if we know 50 tunes, you can't really stop writing down exactly which tune is perfect for which sort of feeling and which sort of avoid, etc. This was something that was much better developed in those days. Okay, there's more to discuss that. We'll just continue this, we know that next week, at least to tie up the subject. We know that.